What's up, ladies and gentle thems, and welcome back to the Shinigami Love Apples podcast, episode 14. I'm Shinigami Pinpin, joined across from me by Shinigami Yuyu, and hope you all are having a good week, and I hope you're excited because I spent money on the podcast. I'm just gonna leave with it because if I don't boast about it now, everyone's gonna stop giving a shit in about 30 seconds. So I gotta say it while I can. If I sound less obnoxious to you, it's because I finally bought a pop filter. Yes, round of applause, please. I finally made good audio decision making, and the podcast sounds less like garbage. But yeah, so I thought it was worth it. We recently blew up on Threads for some reason. I'm not sure. I said two very, very neurodivergent, spicy things, and then Threads took off for us. Now we have 50 followers. So that's cool. And now we just got to get that on. I just smacked that mic. Yeah. Another round of applause. Now just to get Twitch there. We'll get there. Patience. But anyway, how was your week?
It was pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah. I finished a project, so I've got a little bit of breathing room, which I haven't had in a couple months, so that's nice.
Okay. Now, is it because your company has finally hired some people, or are you just less crushed?
I'm in between projects.
Fair enough.
Well, not really, but I still have a shit ton of work to do. But like the main thing that was on my plate is done almost, not technically.
close enough for government work, right? Like, enough to be happy about it. My week was all right. It's this upcoming week that's going to be hell for me.
Yeah,
because this upcoming podcast is going to be a scramble. So, for those of you used to tuning in on Twitch, you can kind of expect next week's podcast to be a little bit late on recording, just because I'm going to be coming hot off the heels of a work shift, and of course, that wonderful work shift. Has decided to be until like 3:30, and I normally do our recordings and stuff at 4. So, you know, that's cool and everything. So I'll have to deal with that when the time comes. But anyway, so we are going to jump straight in this week with some anime. Nothing to backpedal on. Luckily, we've been keeping our ducks in a row, so we haven't embarrassed ourselves as much this week. Just talking about Premium Boss. Funny thing, actually, before we go into anime, I'm going to derail us completely. I did not know that that's Tommy Lee Jones the can. No. I saw some random ass dude. I didn't know it was fucking Tommy Lee Jones. I found that out, and I was like, I was watching a video. It was literally him featured on a Japanese video for Boss. I think it was Rainbow, their Rainbow can, their Rainbow Mountain blend.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, it's actually Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
And the best thing is he speaks a little bit of Japanese in there. Uh-huh. And listening to him kind of, I wouldn't say fumble it, because it wasn't bad, but it was definitely richly colored with an American accent. I was like, oh, all right.
That's funny.
But anyway, on to anime, because that's what we're actually here for, well, among many things. I got to say, I just started watching Windbreaker. I'm only two episodes in, but I know the third episode, I think, just came out, so now I have to play catch up. But Windbreaker is a gang warfare anime, or at least that's how it's sizing up to be. It's gang warfare, high school slice of life. It's kind of just a blend of things. It's being compared a lot to Tokyo Revengers.
Yeah.
Now, the way I've heard it summarized elsewhere is pretty useful. I've heard it summarized as Windbreaker, is a gang warfare anime with school elements. And Tokyo Revengers is a time travel anime with gang warfare elements.
Yeah.
Because I've seen a lot of sort of comparison made between Windbreaker and Tokyo Revengers, and most of it pretty unfavorable. Remember that conversation we had, I don't know, probably 8 or 9 episodes ago now? We were talking about Wuthering Waves versus Genshin, right?
Right.
And how, because they live in somewhat similar circles, folks have kind of compared the two, even though they're completely separate and they don't touch each other at all.
Right.
Maybe they take some inspiration from each other, but I really doubt it. It's the exact same thing with Windbreaker. Like, watching the first two episodes already, I don't get the whole crybaby hero Takemichi vibe. I just don't see him.
Right.
And it doesn't, I guess the only thing it has in common is gang warfare, which, okay, if we're gonna go that route, you can bring out fucking Akira. You can go to any classic beat 'em up.
yeah,
and make comparisons.
Right.
So I think people were just a little disappointed in Tokyo Revengers and the progress it's made, and therefore Windbreaker being fresh again, like you mentioned with Weathering Waves, it's just getting the benefit of the doubt because
yeah,
it's new and improved.
Right.
It is good though. If you haven't had a chance to start watching it, definitely check it out. Next up, cinema. So this week, in the US at least, Spy Family movie Code White released.
Yay.
And I have to say, that was a ton of fucking fun. I can summarize the entire movie, at least,
right,
with two words: poop god.
Yeah.
And so I do want to do like a quick 5-minute speedy review of it.
Uh-huh.
Because most anime movies feel like filler, usually. Mm. It's kind of we're working on season 3, so here's this smorgasbord of random episodic shit that we really didn't want to put into episodes or flesh out in episodes.
Yeah.
And so we made a movie about it. That's the way I felt about the Demon Slayer movie, because the Demon Slayer's movie, not to the Hashira training, not that
The actual like movie.
There was like a summary. I think it was just called the Demon Slayer or something like that. And I wasn't a fan of it because it was just kind of a chopped together summary. It felt like a recap episode, right?
Yeah.
And usually movies, even for Dr. Stone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, for Dr. Stone, it's required. Like, without Ryusei, without that in between, you have no idea who he is and why he's important.
Yeah.
But to be fair, it's still filler-ish. It's his sort of side story. And Blue Lock Nagi is going to be about Nagi. Mm-hmm. So that's the trend. But this was really good. Like, I felt like we made story progress. I feel like everybody got their due. We were talking in our favorite anime shop earlier about how if you're a Yor fan or a Bond fan, you had a really good movie.
Yeah.
unfortunately, we had different experiences though in the theater. So I'm gonna let you summarize yours just so we can get the rant. I'm curious if you're gonna rant about it or if you're just like, yeah, whatever.
Honestly, I'm still so tired. I don't know that I can rant.
Okay.
I always grew up going to the theaters. Mm-hmm. I love it. That was like the thing that we did every single week. So like, I do have a fondness for theaters, and I understand I'm in a public space and there's going to be people that have different personalities and interests and ideas of what is and isn't good to do in a public space. And this is the first time I've ever felt this way specifically, because typically people will be, they all match each other's energy.
Yeah.
Which I would say everybody in this movie did match each other's energy. The problem is it was very loud and distracting.
Very chaotic.
And chaotic. The entire time people were screaming and talking and just going off about everything. And like, especially the people behind me, the guy that was directly behind me was reading out loud all of the subtitles, because we watched it in Japanese.
He was also professing his love for Yor.
Yeah, which that was funny.
Which was funny because he was doing it every time she could just breathe.
Yeah, he'd be like, God,
twitch an eyebrow. God, I love Yor. And I'm just like, I wanted to turn around at some point, like, we all do, bro. We all do.
Which that part was funny, but like, there's people down in front of us that were like, very loudly gasping and screaming and going, no, don't do this. All this, you know, just like
melodramatic. Yeah.
Yeah. Super over the top. And then the lady behind us was just scream laughing at everything. Even if it wasn't funny, she was just screaming at the top of her lungs. So much so that like halfway through, she almost lost her voice because she was screaming so much. And it was just the whole thing. And people were just like clapping and cheering and hooting and hollering. And I was just like, dude, I couldn't hear the movie at all. It was so distracting, and everybody was so much louder than the film itself.
Yeah, that's true.
To be honest with you, there's parts of the movie that I don't even know
or
what was
remember.
Happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, like, respect wise, the crowd was a little too hype because they were definitely getting.
I felt like
so
it was the equivalent of watching
like a sports match.
Your favorite sports, but like the main like Super Bowl World Series cup, like the big finale. This is the absolute pinnacle of what is happening right now.
Yeah.
But like, it was just a silly little.
Yeah. Movie. Just a minor game that everyone's freaking out about.
Yeah.
No, but in my experience, hilariously enough, is the opposite.
Yeah.
And again, if you're listening to this and you're either category of movie viewer, there's no, I guess there is a wrong way to watch a movie. The wrong way is you suss out the vibe of the theater and you're the one dickhead being opposite. Like if the theater is energetic and you're the guy who stands up and goes, shut the fuck up. Well, you're a dickhead because the theater is obviously vibing. And if you don't like it, go watch it in another theater maybe. Mm-hmm. But the opposite's also true where if you're watching in a quieter environment, like if you're going to go watch something like Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even need to be a serious movie, but if you're watching something that doesn't warrant a hype, high energy level output, then maybe don't be that one person in the room going, woo, you know, because then you're that one dickhead, right?
Yeah.
But I had the opposite experience because I love energetic movies.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's one reason I enjoy soccer so much and why I enjoy Blue Lock and Haikyuu, which I'm just loving Haikyuu right now.
Yeah.
I just love presence in a room. It's the same reason I like concerts.
Yeah.
When there's a crowd energy, there's a certain thing about it. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's the whole anime community vibe. Like what was really cool for me was I felt like, even though I probably have never met a single person in that room, odds are true, just judging by where I work.
Yeah.
Cause a lot of folks at our particular theater are tourists. Mm-hmm. But, I felt like I knew some of these people for decades. It was like an anime club vibe, and it was just fun to be around them.
Right. I do like that thing, the aspect of it. But if you look at the experience that we had watching Demon Slayer,
mm-hmm.
Everybody was very quiet and respectful, but you felt everybody's excitement and willingness to be there, and people were happy, and I feel like you still had energy.
Yeah.
But we weren't fucking screaming our absolute fucking balls off at every aspect of everything that happened. Like, that's the thing that really got me. When something exciting happened and people got excited, I was like, okay, forgivable.
Yeah.
But like, they were screaming at fucking nothing.
Mm, yeah.
Like, oh, character picked up orange? A better fucking scream. Like, why? They picked up an orange. It's like the most normal thing that's happened in this entire movie, and you're screaming your fucking cock balls off. For what? That's the thing that pissed me off.
On this episode of You Use Spicy Opinions.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, it's funny because we can both agree that was a good movie. Like, it was an excellent
entry
into the franchise. It's just funny that we had... Well, what'll be interesting, right, is we'll probably rewatch it at some point. And I'm tempted to go back and watch it again in theaters because it was just a great theater movie. It was really well done for like the environment.
I will say, to the credit of the movie itself, they did a really good job introducing everything to where if you've never seen Spy Family at all,
this is a perfect
you could hop into the movie and you'll know basically everything. There's a couple like flashbacks that won't maybe make as much sense to you. But overall, I think you'll understand and appreciate the whole movie, which is great.
It's really a testament too to Wit Studios' ability to continue making the IP not suck.
Yeah.
Because when you get the topic material for Spy Family is super niche.
Mm-hmm.
Misfit family of three super beings, four if you include Bond, four super beings somehow have to not reveal their secrets to each other and also fight their own individual battles that seem to continually overlap. And you would think like it's like Mashal. Mashal is Musclehead goes to Hogwarts, right?
Right.
And after a while, you wonder, can you keep this gimmick up for another 2, 3, 4 seasons? Could you actually, before people get bored and go, okay, you've cracked that joke for the 30th time.
Yeah.
But Spy Family, Spy Family is one of the few series I've ever watched where this is now the quote unquote third season. You know, the movie is the third release and does not feel exhausted. Like I didn't walk away from it going, man, I can't watch any more of that shit.
Yeah.
It was great. So that was really, really cool. All right. Moving on to video games this week. What you got for us? You've got two things, one of which...
Yeah. I'm going to start with Genshin.
Yeah.
Because we love Genshin.
Oyoverse.
We're doing a seance for us.
No, I'm doing a Gregorian chant. It's like Koyana Scotty. Koyana Scotty.
Genshin. I don't have anything particularly unique to say about this, except for... the animated short that they did, which is like actual anime style like they brought in a studio of some. I tried to find who it was. Nobody knows. They didn't credit anybody.
Oh, interesting.
So I don't know if they hired internal teams
or
if they
was it in house. It might have been in house then.
Must have been, but nobody really is sure. Either way, they did a short on the backstory of the new character that's coming out on the 4.6 banner.
Arlecchino?
Yeah, Arlecchino.
Yeah. Okay.
Arlecchino. Arlecchino, that's what it is. I keep fucking up the name. Arlecchino. And it's her whole backstory and how she raised everything up. I don't want to... It's full of spoilers to begin with, and I also don't want to spoil the actual short.
Archon, yeah. Oh,
but it is so fucking good. And I wasn't going to pull for her, but now I'm like, I kind of want her because now that I know a bit more about... Yeah.
Damn.
Just from the short. Now that I know a bit more about her, like, she has an incredible, incredible story. So
that was me with the Liwei Opera and Ganyu and Shenna.
Uh-huh.
And just knowing their background.
Yeah.
Because my favorite piece of music is the opera singer, which is the Liwei. That just...
Yeah.
There's something about that piece that just makes me teary-eyed.
It's really nice.
So, like, I can believe in Genshin coming up with a short or little piece of creative bubble content that is just so damn good.
Yeah.
That it makes you want to pull the character. Because that's why I collected the Shenna and Ganyu cards.
Mm.
The whole point, the reason I got them was like, oh man, this is so cool. I should get some of this stuff. I don't think we've ever talked about those on the... Well, maybe we'll bring that up next week.
Yeah,
we'll talk about. We have this. I want to see where it's distributed first because I'm not sure.
I tried to look up because I was curious because I didn't think that our shop, when we first discovered them, our shop only had like two boxes.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need more than this.
Yes.
So I looked them up online. The best I could find is there's one seller from Alibaba that makes them.
Okay.
So I'm not really sure.
Interesting. All right. we'll have to look up more information on it.
But they're nice.
Now, the second thing.
Yes.
What I'm talking about is
Delta.
Yes, Delta emulator for iOS.
Yeah. It was out. It was available. Like, you could use it on Android, but this is the first emulator that's actually been allowed to be put on the App Store.
Yeah.
Because
copyright.
It lives in an area, even if you do it legally, where 99% of the people using these things are not doing it legally.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I should have maybe looked up. I'm not sure what the stipulations were or anything, but Delta managed to actually get on the App Store. And this was like 2 days ago, and people are going crazy right now because
it's good.
Apple actually finally gets one, and it's super easy to use.
Yeah. Now, it took us 2 minutes to set up.
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah.
Yeah. I had to do a little bit of very legal ripping of my physical media that I own.
Yeah.
Personally.
In order to get the BIOS and bin files and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Which was a little bit of a chore.
Well, it's what you have to
initially.
Do for PC. You have to do the same thing. For those of you who don't know, one of the things about emulators is console emulators or any sort of device emulators, what they're really just doing is you're just building the operating system. It's not doing anything else. It's just simulating the operating system environment. So whenever you download games for them or you have games for them, you have to have the files to run those particular pieces of content. So you usually have, like in the PlayStation and Nintendo emulating world on PC, you have to get a BIOS specific to your region so you can have region unlock for the games you want to play. So Japan, if you want to play Japanese games or PAL games, or if you need a US or European for NTSC. On top of that, you also have to have these support files that provide you with audio support if you've got stereo versus mono, because that was a decision back in the day. In the particular files that we have, we've started dabbling with the DS.
Yeah.
Which is great, by the way, because the DS is funky as a console. There's a lot of a game availability for it, the real physical DS. Like, you can go to a GameStop and probably find pretty good aftermarket, secondhand.
Secondhand,
games and handhelds. The problem is the DS has a notoriously short lifespan. It was a very unreliable handheld. Spent a lot of time fixing it when I had one. So it's kind of nice to have another way to play things like Nintendogs.
There's also a lot of older games too, even just in Game Boy games and stuff
where GBAs
because they had internal batteries and those batteries are dying. So you kind of can't. Even if you wanted to play retro,
you'd have to board solder. You'd have to learn how to get it without destroying the board.
Right, which is very difficult. So anyway, this is, it's great. Also, I'm really excited to play Nintendogs because that is one of my favorite games of all time.
I love Nintendogs so
and
much.
It's not an easy pickup.
No.
Also, popular. If you try to emulate it on like your PC or something, usually there's mic issues. And so far,
seems like it works.
The Delta emulator on iOS seems to work just fine. So that's a huge plus, is you actually get to play this game.
Yeah,
legitimately.
We will keep trying it. We'll let you all listening know if it's good or bad once we've had more time with it. But yeah. I mean, first impressions are really good. So moving on to pop culture. What
yes.
we got?
Oh, I'm so excited. Oh.
I saw the note on this and I have no idea. It looks like a book name.
No.
What is it?
It's a YouTube channel.
Oh, okay.
Called Never Too Small.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. I was looking at the first part. My brain just went
clear. Zajiro. Like,
yeah.
That's the guy that I sent you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I discovered an architectural channel that specializes in like interviewing architects that create really unique tiny homes. And, that's probably the most boring sentence I've ever uttered out of my mouth.
It sounds boring, but trust me, it's not.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I'm gonna give a little bit of a lore drop real quick.
Ooh, okay.
I come from an architect family.
Oh, behind the curtain.
Yes.
Ooh.
I know. Is that scary?
No, it's magical.
And yeah. So I spent a lot of time as a child looking at houses, and I even worked as a draftsman for a little bit. So I especially love architecture. And even interior design to some extent, although I mostly only ever dabbled in the actual design of the house itself. But no, this channel, Never Too Small, they have a bunch of really great videos. But the thing that really got me was this guy, Zajiro, which I think is just his art name. I'm not sure what his actual name is.
He judging by the way he spelled it, he probably is named something similar to Zajiro.
Yeah.
But he spelled it O-G-H. Mm-hmm. So I think he's making it out of Van Gogh.
Van Gogh, right, yeah. Know. He's an artist slash architect, and he made this really, really, really cool house, like the house that he currently lives in. Essentially, so he lives in Tokyo, and Tokyo has a limit of like how big your house can be, just because it's so dense, you have to have that.
Yes.
So his workaround is like, I won't put a roof on it, and we'll call it a courtyard.
Yeah, it's also interesting because he said he got the idea. This video you sent me, mm-hmm. he said he got the idea from ships.
Yes.
Because he's like, well. One of the things you have to do on a ship is you have to be able to turn mm-hmm. any space into livable space on short notice.
Yeah.
But the same token, because of weather. And Tokyo, for those of you unfamiliar with Japan's geography, Tokyo lives in a subtropical belt. So Tokyo's weather varies pretty harshly season to season. Now, it's relatively mid-level humidity. So Tokyo tends to live in sort of Midwestern conditions, humid some days, dry others, but always warm in summers.
Yeah.
Or hot in summers, if we're being honest. Yeah. Not quite Vegas heat, but definitely, or Arizona heat, but like hot.
Hot.
But also gets quite cold in winters. Again, freezing.
Right.
But never humid enough to really snow. They don't get a lot of oceanic effect for that.
Yeah.
So the house design he has is kind of mind-boggling because his living room and sort of everything attached to it is exposed to the elements, and all he really has for a quote-unquote roof is the canopy.
Yeah.
And he admits that, well, I had to build drainage around the outside of my living room because...
Yeah, it's such a cool, like, I highly recommend watching it because you get to see, he talks through all of his, like, little details of like that where, like, yeah, his courtyard slash living room is also an entryway that has drainage pipes to go outside. Yep. And then he had to build enclosures for all of his like his TV and his piano and stuff so they wouldn't get wet.
Yeah.
But it's so cool. And it's revitalized a bit of that love that I had for architecture. And I've been totally geeking out.
I love the quote he also says at the very end, literally as the credits or like, yeah, I guess it's credits, like that as the end card rolls.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, I just kind of thought about, you know, what if I design a house without a roof? That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
So he just did it.
It was so flippant. Like he's like, oh, I'll try it.
This is, once again, the people we love on this show, when we look at inventors, like, you know, we go back to Dawn Cafe that we talked about in the tech episode two episodes ago, which if you haven't heard it, go check it out. Mm-hmm. But as another great example, a lot of these really these really ambitious creators are just people who buck the traditional Japanese trend of going like everybody else goes.
Yeah.
Like, nah, fuck it. I thought it'd be fun to not make a house without a roof.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing that he mentioned in the video is he goes, I did it. And now I can tell all my clients that it's possible. Yeah. And he has an actual physical building that he could showcase and be like, hey, if you want to look at how this works, come over to my house.
Yeah.
I'd do it.
It's really, really neat.
Yeah.
So something we'll kind of point out, because we're already running into our time for the serious shit. Mm-hmm. But before we move on to our anime review, we have some figures to talk about next week. So if you are a collector, or if you're into sort of the anime merch market, we've got a couple of figures to talk about, as well as we'll bring up those cards. We'll bring up the cards next week. And we'll kind of have a little merch special. We'll talk to you about where we get our stuff. We're not hardcore collectors by any means. So if you're kind of looking for true collecting advice, sorry to disappoint.
Yeah.
But if you're an average consumer like us, we can at least give good advice on where not to spend your money and where where it's probably worthwhile. All right, so on to our review this week. We like to call this the oldies with moldies. Isn't always old, but by this point, you know, where we live being where we live, it is probably covered in mold.
Yeah. Oh, true.
All right, so what you got?
Today, I'm going to be reviewing a show that I'm not going to tell you about. It's also not a show, it's a movie. I lied already. My bad.
Okay. All right.
I have to start from the very beginning. So in Japan, they have
not that far back. I'm sorry. Yeah. Went too far.
This is before I was born.
That's a lame joke. Don't fucking send me hate mail.
Or do. I'm still looking for my wife, so.
I mean, well, if you need to send hate mail, you can do so. Yeah, shinigamiloveapples.podcast@gmail.com.
Yay.
Anyway, back to the review.
In 2010.
That was a long time ago.
14 years ago.
Dramatic pause. You're staring at me with a dramatic pause, and I'm just like, there's a delivery coming.
I'm losing it. 2010, Japan started a fund called the Agency of Cultural Affairs.
Okay.
Inside of that, they did a thing called the Young Animator Training Project.
Okay.
Which is for...
heard of this.
Yes.
Okay.
It's for people who are trying to get into the business. They gave grants to help them make stuff.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. Okay.
One of those studios that got the grant is Trigger. And they used this and their younglings to make a little one-off movie that wasn't supposed to really go anywhere, called Little Witch Academia, which is what I'm reviewing. Little Witch Academia, it's so good, and it's so underrated, because again, it was supposed to be this one little one-off, like, oh yeah, the interns made that movie over there, we don't really care too much about it. But then they put it on Netflix in 2015, and the U.S. market was like, well, hold on now. This shit's fucking epic.
Yes.
And from then, they made a second movie just to kind of test the waters to see if it was a fluke or not. Again, blew up, and then they made the TV show. Today, I'm just going to review the first movie.
Yeah, the 2013.
It's 2013.
Yeah.
It's such a sweet and sort of like unassuming movie. Also kind of funny that Trigger made it, because it doesn't feel like a Trigger animation necessarily. It's a lot more
I've seen that in the reviews relaxed. Where folks said like it's not a typical Trigger shtick.
Probably because the interns made it.
Yeah.
But it's about this world in which witches live, as you can imagine, and they have a school for it. And your main character, Akko, she's this young girl. She goes to, I think it's, and she goes to like a circus or something and sees one of the witches put on this amazing performance, and she falls absolutely in love with magic and makes it her whole life. Mm-hmm. The thing is, it's so the people there kind of view the main witch, who's the her name's in the Chariot, Shiny Chariot is what they call her.
Okay.
That's the witch that performed. Most people kind of like write her off by the time they're in their teenage years. They're like she's just
thing.
A silly little, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Well, yeah, actually it's a lot like Santa Claus, because for one, she technically doesn't exist. She's just so supposed to inspire the young generation.
Okay, so she's like a myth or legend.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Our main character, who grows up on this, sees, you know, whatever the equivalent of their movies are, or whatever, or some show. I don't even fucking know, because I'm talking about this, I'm confused, because I don't think she's...
It's like a theatrical performance, I'm guessing. They saw a
maybe she's still alive and Well, see, now I'm confused. I watched this a long time ago. For one.
Yeah, oldies with moldies. Here we go. Here's the mold. Yeah.
Maybe she was still around. Because I remember she watched an actual performance, and that was the thing that like got her really excited about it.
Okay. It sounds like maybe she retired or just left the public eye or just vanished.
Yeah. Well, spoiler alert, she's not an actual witch. And that's why people don't like her. She is a pretend witch. And people realized she was basically just shooting fireworks and calling it magic. Which is funny because there's in this universe, magic does actually exist. And there are actual witches that do perform actual magic.
So she was really just a figurehead of like...
Yeah.
Represents but is not one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of.
Paid actress.
So here's the thing. Akko goes to school. She gets bullied because she still believes in Miss Shiny Chariot.
Yeah.
kind of a weird outcast sort of girl. You meet some of the other girls in the school. They end up getting a school assignment where they have to go discover artifacts. The artifacts, it's just like this old dungeon just full of just dumb shit. They have to fight some people. Mm-hmm. Or not some people, but like some little gremlins and shit. They end up finding a dragon there. And dragon protecting the treasures, you know?
Yeah.
And they end up having to fight the dragon because the dragon's going to like kill the whole town.
Mm-hmm.
But in doing so, they actually end up accidentally unlocking the thing that held Shiny Chariot's wand, which is the thing that like went missing.
Okay.
And this is where the other plot twist happens, where you find out that Shiny Chariot actually is a real mage, but it was all inside of her wand. It wasn't her.
Oh, okay.
So she is actually like this big, great, really powerful witch.
Yeah.
But it wasn't because of her. It was because of the wand.
Now, is the wand like long lost? Like
yes.
Okay. So that's where the myth separated her from.
That's
her
where I got confused. Wasn't. She's still alive and did do her performances. She just lost the wand, and that was the issue. but the thing is, nobody could figure out how to actually use the wand until Akko found it, and she kind of. That's again. It's so funny that you said Santa Claus, because like it really is like Santa Claus, where she was only able to use it because she believed it was real.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like what's that movie, Elf, where like only fly because they ended up believing that he was actually Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. that's so fun. I'm not gonna be able to get that out of my head now. I'm just gonna view this as Santa Claus the movie. but it's really cute. It's well animated. I don't think I quite gave the storyline of it justice.
I mean, you got me interested.
Yeah, but it's so fun. And again, this was just supposed to be a one-off movie, and people loved it so much that they made a second movie and then a whole show.
Oh.
But it's all on Netflix because it's an exclusive, and we don't make money.
Oh.
Sag.
Oh, wow. I can really crank that to the prop filter now. I can just trumpet because I'm not blowing the air. Just
nice. That sounds pretty good. Anyway, that's my review.
What's your rating out of 10?
Oh, I gave it a 9.
Nice. All right. All right.
This is a 7.8 overall.
Which I imagine that's probably a balance between folks who saw it because of hype and folks who just saw it because I've seen some reviews from people who saw the animator project.
Yeah.
That was going on. Because apparently it was one of many, many, many projects done because of the grants.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. Yeah.
So it looks like there were several folks who were following it anyway. That's kind of cool. The Young Animators Project, sorry, I want to make sure I quote that correctly. There's an actual name. It is. Young Animator Training Project.
Yeah.
But yeah, apparently it's the Animation Labor Group as a whole gets funding from the Japanese government on a yearly basis from the Agency for Cultural Affairs to promote animation. That's interesting. I'm curious how that sort of the funding going into the animation studios for internships and all that. I wonder how that shapes up because of sort of the struggles of animators under the crunch. At some point, I want to talk about that. Not now. This is not the time, but that just made me, just inspired me to have that conversation at some point. So we will track back to it. But before we get into serious shit, we have to talk about the things we think are fucking dumb. Okay, I was waiting for a follow. I saw your face, and I'm like, maybe he's...
I was trying to determine when it was the right time.
It was never the right time.
No.
Oh, it's unfortunate.
I was also reading.
Things we think are fucking dumb. Okay, so for those of you who don't live in the United States, I don't know, maybe this is a thing internationally. I wouldn't know. I've not been... In your experience, is it? Is it?
It's a lot more in the U.S.
Okay.
But there are people from the U.S. that do this in other countries.
Oh, well, of course.
So
here's the thing we're talking about. So American shopping malls. Now, we have this little weekly thing we do where we go out, we go get Japanese food from an actual family-owned restaurant, which we now know their name, and that's super cool. So we actually have been meeting the family members. It's super cool. We do that. We go to our favorite anime and K-pop shop to get everything we could ever want there. They're fucking awesome. And then we go to the mall and we get boba. That's kind of our like routine every week. Now, the mall that we go to, like most American malls, you have these little kiosks scattered down the middle of pretty much every aisle, hawking every possible generic item, right? And these sales folks, for lack of better words, will absolutely harangue and harass every single person that passes them.
Yeah.
Now, for the most part, a lot of it's comical. Like, we have that one that we always pass that has the little vibrating massagers that you're supposed to use on your shoulders and back.
Yeah.
And we go by like, ah, I already have enough sex toys, thanks. Or, ah, sorry, that one wouldn't fit.
Yeah.
And it's funny. And you see them get like really uncomfortable because it's like, but they're also selling a scam product because they're selling some Chinese knockoff thing they bought off eBay for like, or like Wish probably, for like $3. And they're trying to market to you for $200. It's a miracle product. You know, but they're bad.
Yeah.
But what's worse was who we saw today.
Yes.
And if you are strongly conservative, thank you for watching our show, but plug your ears because I'm going to offend
or
the fuck.
Or just leave.
Yeah, there's that too.
We don't need
that. Yeah. Yeah. We're not catering to that demographic. But what I'm about to say, it only is going to offend them, and I don't care.
Yeah.
Christo-fascists.
Yay.
Our favorite. We love those folks. Here's the thing. Today we went to the mall and we're just doing our usual thing. We see a couple people with, you know, Jesus shirts and shit on. Okay, whatever. We see this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
This mall, for whatever reason, is just the target for these people. But today we were walking by a shop where every single person in the shop.
Yeah. Well, I actually saw them before this when we were at the restrooms because there was a group of guys that were harassing people in the restroom.
In the restroom? I didn't fucking know that. Oh, fucking hell.
Yeah. They were going in and out of the restroom and then parading in there. And then one of the kids came out and actually like blocked off the door to keep the people in.
What the fuck? Anyway. So these folks are going around with these fucking Christo-fascist fucking shirts, being all preachy. But the thing is, I'm going to point out two things about it, and I'm going to be super offensive about it, and I'm going to be done with it. Look, I have my vices, but at least I'm transparent about them, because folks are like, oh, well, don't be an offensive douchebag. No, I'm going to be an offensive douchebag every now and then. At least I'm going to warn you. You can judge me. I accept my punishment. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Cancel me. Here's my thing. The vast majority of these folks in this group are very definitively social rejects.
Yeah.
And I'm not being a dickhead. Mm-hmm. They are social rejects. People who are social rejects, who cannot operate in society, are prone to being led this way.
Yeah.
That's just, no one truly likes this shit. Mm-hmm. If you have social skill, nothing gives you more anxiety than a forced social interaction in which you will push anything onto another person. That is an undesirable interaction. Even worse so, that you're doing it in mob format.
Yes.
There weren't two of these proselytizers, not five, not 10, not 20, easily 50 plus.
Yes. They were in groups of like five to seven. And there was multiple of these groups going in and out of different businesses.
Yeah. Just going in, haranguing everybody.
Yeah.
And then leaving. And then making snarky ass comments like they did at the one Hot Topic we left.
Yeah.
Making fucking snarky ass comments to the employees who don't want them there because you're bothering our customers.
Yeah.
And then we went to past that one shop that sells sneakers and shit. And there's like every single person in that room. There's like 20 of them.
Yeah.
And all they're doing, they're not shopping. No. They're just taking up space and being obnoxious. And it's like, look, if you're holding a protest, whatever, I don't fucking support your cause, but whatever, knock yourself out. It's a protest. To sit there and harangue people, and I love that word because it's super descriptive, to sit there and literally be an asshat to every person, tourist and local alike.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Things we think
are fucking dumb.
Yeah, we don't like those people. Anyway, we're going to move on to our serious shit section here in just a second. But first, a quick break for future ads that we may or may not have. Why is my music not... Oh, because I probably muted it. All right. So, for those of you new to the podcast, welcome to the second half. We like to call it Serious Shit. In this section, we kind of like to talk about real-life social issues affecting Japan, folks looking to live or work in Japan who are foreign, and just fans of the country in general. Just keep in mind that the topics we're talking about are real life, so use good judgment and understand that we're probably going to crack a few fewer memes about it.
Mm.
And again, just saying that, well, this first article is a perfect follow-up to the article we had last week. So last week, we talked about this, what was it? It was a 10 million yen? Yes, a 10 million yen gold bull. Mm-hmm. That was stolen from a Tokyo department store that was doing an exhibit, like a showcase of antiques. 10 million solid gold, not gold plated, just stolen. And apparently the perpetrator just walked in, took backpack, grabbed item, put in backpack, walked away. Which fucking audacity on that guy. Damn. Okay. And when we see his comment later, it's perfect.
Yeah.
But they recovered it. But the best part is they recovered it at an antique shop. So this person, we were talking at the end of this story where we said, you know, the hardest part about petty theft, and well, grand theft in this case, but like the hardest part about selling a stolen item is the fact that if it's recognizable at all, no one wants to buy it because it's a hot item.
Yeah.
This is worth 10 mil.
Yeah.
Impressively, he managed to go to a local shop. Where is this local shop? Oh, in the Tokyo's Taito Ward.
Mm-hmm.
So in basically metropolitan Tokyo, he managed to resell it. Yeah. And for a value of 1.8 million.
Yeah.
That's only 18 grand, right, in American dollars. About a little stronger than that, I think. So closer to 20, 23,000, somewhere in that range. Decent money, but nowhere near less than like 10% of the value of its total value.
Yeah.
But the best part for me is the way he got caught.
Yes. It's so funny.
He gave them his ID card. Look.
That's so funny. See, I think the problem is, so when we talked about this last week, we were talking about it from the perspective of Americans, where this happens, and you need to wait for items to cool off, try and go to a different country if you can, especially when it's that much money. You got to hold on to it for like 10 years at least so people forget about it. You know, this whole thing. But I think they're just, this doesn't happen. So you don't think about these things.
No, obviously not.
Because he just took it and went to the neighbor and was like, hey, did you want this? I stole it yesterday. Here's my ID.
Just the audacity. And they took it, by the way, which is even funnier.
Yeah.
They bought it from him and paid him decent money. And then his comment. what was his name here is Hori, Masaru Horie. Horie said, I saw the T-ball and I took it because I thought I may be able to do it.
That is just so funny.
The balls on this man.
Yeah.
He just walks in and goes, you know, it'd be kind of a fun meme.
Mm.
If I take that fucking gold ball.
Yeah.
Took it and then went, you know, it'd be a fun meme. If I sold that gold bull.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be a fun meme. If I gave them my ID card and they came and busted my ass because I don't know how to commit grand theft. Anyway, Japan, look, we love you, but if you're going to steal shit, maybe don't take your advice from from a fucking jackass.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Anyway, so second article. This is actually fascinating. This is less... Mm-hmm. A serious topic and just kind of fast. I never knew this. So Japan's currency. So Japan is a unique nation economically. They're one of the few nations left in the world that still do work on cash. Uh-huh. Japan's primarily cash-based. I think they said statistically, you want to say like 94%. Do I see that statistic somewhere or did I go blind? I think it's somewhere in the 90%.
Yeah, it's 94%.
94%.
Ooh. Oh, no. Sorry. Sorry. They mix this up. It's less than 40% of payments are processed by cards. Then they mentioned in South Korea, the figure is 94%.
Oh, gotcha. That's where I had that number in mind. Okay, so, you know, less than 40% on cards. So that means, you know, over the vast majority of financial transactions in Japan are still done in cash. Well, the interesting thing about Japan that I never knew, I just learned this today, so today I learned the more you know. Japan's currency is redone every 20 years, and the last time it was done was in 2004. And I'm mainly talking about bills, so not their coins. The yen coin still seems to be relatively consistent.
Yeah.
Or the yen coins. But the bills are redesigned, and their paper is really unique. Apparently, there was a dedicated plant called Mitsumata. The paper is called Mitsumata, but it comes from a traditional plant. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the family. Maybe I will, actually. I'll bet you that's thyme instead of thyme. Thymelicia? If you're a biologist or a botanist, get back to me. I probably butchered it. But Thymelicia family, it's a high-altitude plant. And if you think about it, they said the requirements for the plant are high altitude, moderate sunshine, and good water drainage.
Mm.
What's another plant that sounds like that? Ooh, tea. If there's one Japan export that they grow a ton of outside of rice, the obvious one, it's tea. So for Japan, they literally began outsourcing this plant growing process out of the country because they wanted the land for tea, which by the way, that is a very Japanese thing. Hey guys, we need to put some money into our mint. Yeah. It requires this special type of paper from this tree. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Oh, where's this tree? Oh, it's currently in the way of us making tea. Well, fuck the paper then.
Yeah.
We're making tea. Who wants this plant? You over there. And so they exported it. It's the Himalayas.
Very nice.
Which, holy shit, that's a leap in logic.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I need some mountainous terrain. They didn't go to like fucking Rocky Mountains or any like moderate mountains. Like, nah, we need Mount Everest or nothing.
Yeah.
So they outsourced the tree growing process to Nepal. And Nepal apparently has its own wild plant that meets the exact requirements. It's called Argeli. I believe I said that right.
Mm-hmm.
Argeli. And it's the paper on which Japan prints its cash. Fucking cool. It's such a random thing because Japan is so, I don't know, isolated from the rest of the world. You'd think they do everything themselves. I know that's not true. Like, Japan obviously has to import oil. Yeah. They have to import, or any petroleum product for that matter. Japan probably imports most of its grains, that sort of thing, right? But, like, you never think money.
Yeah.
Because we still use cash in the U.S., but, again, nowhere near on the magnitude of Japan. Yeah. But, like,
You're almost kind of weird if you use money, or, like, paper money nowadays.
It feels
strange. It's like, why would you do that?
But I've also never thought about American money in that way. I've never gone, I wonder what plant this came from. Yeah. I don't even know if American money is plant fiber anymore. I think it's artificial fibers now.
I believe they still use some cotton, but it's mostly synthetic stuff. Yeah.
But like, again, and I know they do that because of like anti-counterfeiting. They put certain synthetic threads in, like certain ink tints and stuff to stop you from counterfeiting. Japan actually, ironically, doesn't have a huge problem with cash counterfeiting. Somebody get on that. No, please don't. I didn't.
Yeah.
I am not.
I think I know
you.
A country that's really good at making it. So.
Yeah. So I am not encouraging mafia based crime. I'm pretty sure the Yakuza would already be on top of it if we're actually doable.
Yeah.
But yeah, they outsourced all of their plant growing to the Himalayas. Now, interestingly, this is kind of a sweet deal for both of them because Nepal, the government there admits that they export, just for what they were mentioning, this one guy, the name Sherpa, and he expects to earn 60 grand in profit. Now you have to consider, and the article mentions this because it's a key data point.
Yeah.
The average annual income in Nepal is only $1,300.
Yeah.
So, like, if we want to put things in scale, right? Let's say I make 50 grand a year. This guy is making 60 times that in profit.
Mm-hmm.
So again, this, I feel like that was the magic number last week was 60 times, but I don't remember. Maybe I'll just imagine number, but
yeah,
that's like me making 3 mil.
Right.
Like that is a truly impressive figure. Like, wow, mm-hmm. good job. Damn. Like,
yeah, well,
it's a great deal for them.
If you look at it, he said he hired 60 people. So
and still is making profit. Yeah.
Oh, is this on top of his profit?
Yeah. He says expects to earn 60,000 in profit. Now, I'm assuming profit is after hiring, you know, after that.
Oh, see, like, I was reading it the other way around. That, like, he's making just enough to pay
his people. Employees.
Yeah.
No, I honestly think he's probably making true. Huh. If it says in profit, I imagine it's after he's already hired these folks. Because otherwise, it would be, like, his net pay would be, lower.
Yeah.
And he's, now, to be fair, he's kind of an exotic case because he's producing a seventh. He's producing, almost 20%. Of all of the money or the paper, I guess, paper material going to Japan. But wow. So good deal for both of them. Just, I want to be in the room. And we've talked about this before with Japan. Japan's decision-making is such a unique thing. Just I would just kill for a 80-hour masterclass on picking apart the Japanese mindset because it is a unique thing. But I would love to be in the room for that meeting where they went, hey, guys, we have to outsource it.
Right.
And one, hear them say, well, we can't put it there because we want to put tea there.
Yeah.
And then two, your first thought was Nepal.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting because I didn't think about this till just now. The tea has to be worth more than whatever they're paying Nepal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
If they're paying this one guy 60 grand to make a small amount of the overall that they're going to be paying these Nepali farmers.
Yeah.
Theoretically, the tea's worth more than that? Or are they just so in love with their tea that they decided to foot the bill? And be like, yeah, it's really expensive, but we got to have our tea.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're not including import and export costs, freight.
Right.
Everything.
That's just the money that they're paying him specifically. So again, you have all the shipping and everything.
I'm also curious about Nepal's relationship to Japan because for the US, right, we joke, and I don't mean this in a racist sense, but unfortunately it ends up being that way because of the way the US behaves. The US will always outsource to Mexico if it can.
Yeah.
It just always will. It's like, oh, send it across the wall. It's a horrible way to look at things, but that's just the way the US is economically. But I'm curious, was this like the same with Japan where they're like, hey guys, we got to export this or we need to outsource this. And the first thought is send it to Nepal. They'll do it. It's like,
yeah, I don't know.
It's just weird. It's not the first country you'd think of for any sort of like economic agreement. Oh yeah. Let's work with Nepal. They're great.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, I don't know. My thought was just like, you would naturally want to look towards poorer countries.
Yeah, to pay them less, obviously, economically, unfortunately. Yeah.
Well, for one, to pay them less, but for two, they'll probably just take whatever you give them because they need work.
Yeah.
Regardless of that.
Well,
and then they also happen to have the plant that is needed to do it in the first place. So like it does make sense.
Yeah.
It might not have necessarily been their first choice, but like it's a logical one.
It's just fascinating. It's just Nepal. It's like it's a nation you don't really
Hear about too often.
No. Especially on the global scale, but yeah.
Right. The only thing anybody knows about Nepal is Mount Everest.
Yeah.
And technically, the Yeti, but I don't think most people would know that that's where the Yeti comes from.
So speaking of global interests and RF noise, because
that
cell tower just really started popping off.
The government knows what we're about to talk about, and they're sabotaging us.
As you said the word... The government knows. My brain just started the Nowhere song. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Anyway, this article, this is the true serious shit. Like the stuff we just talked about, sure, they're real world things, but what we're about to talk about, we don't ever really talk politics on this podcast because one, we're Americans and we don't have enough of a horse in the race in Japan to talk about their politics in a way that does justice. I don't want to be that dickhead foreigner that speaks for the Japanese. I do not. I speak for myself and my own opinions.
Yeah.
And I don't want to pretend I understand either, but this I do understand because the US has decided, as always, to stick its nose in everybody else's fucking business. And I will have opinions on how we behave. The article title from the Japan Times is Benefits and Risks AUKUS looks to take a game on Japan. So you've already, you kind of clued me into this. Tell me about what it is before I give my opinions.
So AUKUS is an acronym. It's Australia, United Kingdom, United States. It's essentially like a little group force effort that the three countries are putting together to bully China more, because why not, I guess, at this point. Like, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. I'm sure most people probably agree, like, the U.S. just needs to leave people alone, but we don't. Yeah. So, they created this little group here, and they're looking to add some other countries. The first one that they were wanting was Japan, and as of, I believe, this morning, Japan has accepted that. And so now they're working with AUKUS. But it's really just a military effort to help kickstart a potential war / stop a war. I'm sure they have very flowery language about how we're protecting Taiwan and all this shit. Which I think you and I both agree, like, Taiwan needs to stay Taiwan.
Needs to stay independent. Yeah.
But the thing is, this whole effort, there's people are being a little weird about it, because AUKUS specifically is nuclear warfare. They're sending nuke submarines,
nuclear capable,
to the border of China.
Yeah.
And especially when Japan finally said, yeah, we'll join you, people were like, history? Did we forget?
Well, so the interesting thing is, so the agreement is specifically called Pillar 2, and Japan specifically has mentioned it is uncomfortable with the aggression side of this. Japan has stated, and I'm going to quote the article just to make sure I say it, Japan sees the benefits in providing strong industrial and technological capacity at a time when Tokyo has identified boosting defense production as a key national security pillar. Yeah. But
that's the thing that this whole thing is obviously very aggressive, but the language that they put behind it is that we're protecting Taiwan.
Yeah.
Right. So it is a quote-unquote defense thing, but America's never defended anything. They've only ever attacked things. So that's where it lives in that sort of weird thing. And to Japan's credit, Australia is the one sending the nukes. Japan is just helping create technologies.
Yes.
For the defensive effort. So in fairness, Japan isn't isn't being nuclear warfare heavy-handed. But people are kind of looking at it as a sort of like, really, guys?
Well, and the thing is, I'm going to clarify, just because I have a little bit of military background. They're nuclear capable. It's whether or not a nuclear weapon gets loaded onto these things and gets put within firing range of China is irrelevant. The point is, it's saber rattling. That's the actual term for it. This is called saber rattling. This is looking at another nation and saying, we think you're being threatening, whether you have a valid opinion or not, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But we think you're saber rattling, so we're going to rattle ours back at you. But here's the thing, and this is where I'm going to say my opinion for the next 5 minutes and get my rant over with. I personally, I'm married to a Chinese woman, and I am quite sick of the of the U.S. getting on China's dick for everything. I don't know what our obsession is with shitting on that nation. And I know this is a pro-Japan podcast, and I understand that the Japanese have some pretty strong opinions of the Chinese and their past history, just like they have strong opinions of Korea, given past history. But the thing is, the Japanese populace at no point is screaming and shouting for China to be contained or threatened. The general populace really has no interest. And it's funny, because if you look at Japan's response to being invited to Pillar 2, it says that Tokyo's contribution specifically would be developing and sharing capabilities in hypersonics, anti-submarine warfare, cyber weapons, quantum computing, AI, and mostly cyber warfare seems to be Japan's focus. But it's the way they phrase it. I love the phrase. It's designed to counter China's regional assertiveness.
Yeah.
It's their fucking waters off their giant goddamn fucking country. Like, holy hell, that is a large country. Yeah. It doesn't look like
people
it on
don't
paper,
realize how big China actually is. It is massive.
And in population.
Yeah.
The most populous country on Earth, as far as my last statistics saw. it, you know, it's overwhelmingly large. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, yes, China has some very choice words on the global stage. So does the U.S. Remember this? You remember Mr. Cheeto? He's got some choice words for other nations. Anybody know of this little tiny penis Russian dude named Putin? He's got some opinions on the global stage. Yeah. But at the end of the day, your diplomacy isn't based off what your tiny dick ass leader is saying on the global stage. It's how you behave. And for Japan, the reason they're even hesitating to join Pillar 2 is because there is a strong statement in joining alliances where they're not needed. China has not... Let me put it this way. China's most recent threat to Taiwan was to take a Coast Guard cutter, go out and patrol their waters. And I will admit, they crossed into Taiwan's economic exclusion zone. Yeah. All right, fine. I understand the politics of that. That's delicate. That's probably bad decision-making on the part of China's military.
Yeah.
But... when they were approached about it, China's only response was to blast them with water cannons, which I personally think is kind of funny. It's the same stuff you would use to take down drug dealers or narcotics dealers in the waters or other violent individuals. You just spray them with water and knock them on their backs and ha ha ha. China literally just sprayed a couple Taiwanese boats.
Yeah.
Yes. Again, yes. China is saber rattling. I don't see why we need to continue provoking it. And I don't like, as an American, I don't like the fact that we're getting other nations involved in this shit. It is way too similar to Cold War era stuff. And the reason, as a millennial looking at my boomer parents and boomer aged everybody I work for and associate with being paranoid about red China and red Russia. Now, whatever, yeah. Russia's not red, but they're still dickheads, or at least their government is led by a dickhead.
Yeah.
But China hasn't demonstrated, outside of standard sort of humanitarian crises issues, which, by the way, before anybody gets self-righteous and hops on their high horse and goes, they perpetrate atrocities. I would like you to understand that you're United States government and you hear me, fucking CIA. I know you can hear this shit. They'll pull you into dark rooms, too.
Yeah.
So before any American citizens, especially if you're young and easily naive, let me inform you. The American government can pull you off the fucking street for any reason it finds.
Yeah.
And detain you. Unlawfully or lawfully, it does not matter. For as long as it desires. We don't do anything different than China.
Yeah.
So to provide an agreement like this is the U.S. literally throwing stones and going, hey, we're holy. We never do bad things.
No.
China never does bad things.
Yes.
Japan, don't you agree that China does bad things? Join us and we will tell China they're a fuckface. Look, yeah. I think Japan needs to stay the fuck out of this. I really, really do. I think Japan needs to stay as far away as possible because they are not capable of protecting themselves against an angry China. If the provocations continue, it's like you said, right? They're stirring up either a war or they're trying to prevent it, and we don't know which is the truth. We never will until history proves us right or wrong.
Yeah.
But no matter what, if you do start a war, the nation closest to the fallout zone, besides Taiwan, which is already a picking point for China, is Japan.
Yeah.
Maybe let's not poke an angry nation. Just thinking of it. Especially when I fucking live next door to them.
Yeah.
I love how the U.S. loves to piss in international conflict because we feel so invulnerable being on our own fucking continent.
Yeah.
Same, by the way, Australia too. Wow. Right. The nation on an island and Britain. Wow. There's a common factor in all these fucking nations. They're all isolated from the theaters and they're not concerned. Now, Australia is the closest. The UK joining this makes no fucking ounce of sense.
I don't know.
What? Because they left the EU and now they're.
Yeah. They're, well, I think, I think AUKUS is more than just China bad. It's
I'm sure there's regional,
right?
Overall regional protections, but I guarantee
because I think this was in reference to, I forget what the other one is called, the one that is, I believe it's India, Saudi Arabia, Russia, and China.
Their block. Yeah.
Yeah. This is in reference to that. So I think the UK's interest is because of Russia, less or more so Russia than China, but I don't know.
I don't know. It's Japan is a huge risk avoidance culture and very much embraces the status quo when the status quo is favorable.
Yeah.
If you're Japanese and you're listening to your leaders pull sabers out, start rattling them, I would shy away from this because it goes against Japan's cultural grain of staying out of potential conflict and is going to draw attention to them in ways that China could hold very, very personally if things went wrong.
Yeah.
And I would not want to be on the receiving end of that.
Yeah.
And I as American, don't want to be on the receiving end of it. So again, I have Chinese friends. I'm married to a Chinese woman. I indulge myself in Chinese pop culture media content. It's part of the whole, like, we cover Asian stuff on this podcast, not just Japan. We love Japan, but we cover the Asias in general.
Yeah.
I don't get the shitting on it. It's just, it feels like a bunch of boomers who cannot let go of the Cold War, finding new and improved ways to perpetuate the Cold War.
Yeah.
Which, good for them, as we guess.
Also, real quick, because you mentioned China's population. I've never really looked at like global populations, but this kind of just blew my mind. As of 2022, they are no longer number one. It's now India.
India, okay.
India is 1.43 billion.
Oh my God.
China is 1.42 billion. Third is United States at 340 million.
340, okay. I was gonna say. Wow. Yeah, there's nothing.
They have both of those countries have more than a billion people.
Yeah,
each than we do in the entire U.S.
Yeah,
that blew my mind.
And and the other thing too is the reason this is not a good idea. It also stirs up this weird sort of cultural strife. At some point, I really want to start studying Japan's relationship with Korea because I know that has been poor for a very long time.
Yeah,
I understand that Japan has unfortunately been kind of on the pushing side of this issue.
I actually just learned a little bit about this because I didn't realize this. I knew Japan had taken over Korea for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then Korean War stuff, U.S. took over. I didn't realize this, but U.S. gave it back to Japan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for a brief
like,
brief
they
while.
Got their independence for like 2 months. U.S. came in, fucking murdered half of them, split them in half with the Soviet Union, and then was just like, oh, Japan, did you want to come back?
Yeah.
Nice.
Which, that's kind of in poor taste, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I would love to study that side to understand culturally why the Japanese and the Koreans don't necessarily get along. But again, Japan being a purely defensive, isolationist attitude, them getting involved in a aggressive, it is aggressive, I don't care how you look at it, rattling your saber is aggression, you know, showing a gun, drawing a knife, putting your fists up. That's aggression. You're not being defensive. Defensive is keeping your hands to your side until you need them.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't feel very Japanese. And I really hope the Japanese people don't go along with it because I just don't know. I'm not going to speak for them again, but it just feels like a bad choice to me. Anyway, on that, to quote Top Gear, on that bombshell, it's time to end. Thank you so much for tuning into the Shinigami Love Apples podcast. If you liked what you heard, or if you want to leave some fan mail or hate mail, you can write into us at shinigamiloveapples.podcast@gmail.com. We'll be sure to read out your emails and chat about them on the podcast. Also consider following us on Threads. It's our kind of our main social media outlet at the moment. It's too much work for me to manage all the others. But we are just crossed 50 followers, so if you want to support us in there, we would be very, very grateful. And as always, if you are watching or listening to this on Twitch, do consider following our Twitch channel, Shinigami_love_apples. This has been the Shinigami Love Apples podcast, episode 14. I was Shinigami Ping Ping. That was Shinigami Yu Yu, and we will see you next week.